substantially similar, which is substantially similar. In other words, if you have a 17-year-old driving door-to-door, selling newspaper subscriptions, they should be paid no different for the performance of the work than a 19-year-old driving door-to-door, selling newspaper subscriptions. I believe we're talking about jobs that are substantially similar. If you have somebody selling newspaper subscriptions over the phone, whether it's done from the newspaper office or done from the home, I think is irrelevant. In fact, I would say if it's done over the phone or done door-to-door, if there's no substantially different overhead cost, then different rate of pay is not justified.
Madam Chair.
Senator Otto?
I'd like to ask you a question.
Okay.
Suppose we have these youngsters going door-to-door. One of them becomes real interested in soliciting subscriptions. He goes home and he gets on the phone and calls his aunts, his uncles, his cousins, his friends, and whatever, and sells subscriptions that way also, and turns them in at the same time that he is supposed to by going door to door. Are we going to discriminate then on how the subscription was acquired?
Madam Chair,
he didn't require any supervision in his own home, and yet the end result is the same.
Madam Chair, Senator Otto, the circumstances now vary a great deal from newspaper to newspaper. They're very different. One example may be, and one example that was raised to me was that the Statesman Journal pays adults $1 a subscription in a phone room and pays its carriers $4 a subscription door-to-door. I assume the result of this bill would be they would have to be the same. Either the adults would have to be taken to $4 in the phone room, or the carriers are going to have to be reduced to $1 in the field. But one situation, a hypothetical, and this is the case in many situations, someone might pay an adult $3 unsupervised to get starts, might pay their carriers $2 to get starts, and provide a supervisory network. Now, you are right. Those carriers can, on their own, go door-to-door without that supervision. They can take advantage of the supervision. They can call. They are generally involved in a system of a wide variety of prizes, trips, different kinds of incentives for the number of subscriptions that they get that draws the cost of that subscription from $2 up to $3 or even greater for the newspaper. But while one carrier who gets very few starts may end up ultimately making only $2 a start, this carrier that you're talking about may make the equivalent of $10 a start because of the prizes and so forth that he has won in this incentive program. And that's a lot of our concern, is that this prize incentive program is one that we would hate to see forced to be eliminated by this kind of thing, because the carriers enjoy it, frankly, and they many carriers have got their actual cash controlled to some extent by their families, whereas the prizes that they can win are not, are theirs to keep and things that they like. So it's a concern about the elimination of that system. But it is possible, and it is true that there are situations where a carrier is going out on his own, and as you have described, and that may be seen as discrimination. However, that carrier is generally getting prizes that alter what is the real compensation. So it's kind of a confusing thing. The issue of what is identical work is one that I think has been mentioned here is just not raised in the bill. Is it indeed identical to call on the phone as to be taken door-to-door by a supervisor? If the answer is yes, but it is not identical to go motor route or carrier. These are just questions that we're concerned. We hate to come here in confusion, but we just don't really understand how the bill as written will impact our industry.
Senator Otto.
Question for Mr. Tiffany. You heard Mr. Lindley's concerns. If we take all of those into consideration of how the subscription is sold, whether in a boiler room where someone's provided a list that says these people are not presently taking the Salem Statesman, or here's just go through the phone book and start calling. Now, there's two different concerns there. One, where the boiler room person has a list of people that is presently not taking the Salem Statesman. And the other challenge is, well, here's the phone book, and 40% of the people take the Salem Statesman. Try to pick out on your own the other 60% and start telephoning. Then we have the door-to-door salesman trying to get subscriptions. And then we have one of the enterprising youngsters that, in addition to going door-to-door, gets on the phone, calls his friends and relatives trying to peddle the subscription. Would this create an administrative nightmare for you?
Madam Chair, Senator Otto, the way the bill is written right now, I think that our direction would be clear. I believe that the same rate would have to be paid to all of those, in all those situations, the persons under 18. Persons who are under 18 would have to receive the same rate as those over 18.
And back to my question, if we adopt all of these amendments trying to define different things in different situations, would that create an administrative nightmare?
Madam Chair, Senator Otto, there is quite a bit of direction in that regard under the equal pay law at the federal level and other places. I think that the more words you have, the more regulation you have, the more difficult it is to administer.
Okay. Representative Hill, did you want to comment
on that? Yeah, I'd like to make a couple comments. The word identical would be far too binding. And I understand that's been introduced as or suggested as an amendment.
Well, at this point, I have this letter from the Newspaper Publishers Association saying there's going to be amendments, but I don't see any amendments. Does someone have them?
Couldn't get them out.
Okay, so we don't have amendments. Well, no, these are House amendments that are actually the bill now, but we don't have any Senate amendments that I'm aware of at this point before us. Does anyone have them?
No, right after the meeting, Madam Chair, I went to Legislative Council and asked them to get them out. They are not ready.
But you're proposing. You're going to propose.
I will propose unless there's some other action here, some other.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know if the votes are here, but I'm ready to move Senate Bill 2900 to the floor with a due pass. We received House Bill 2900.
Well, I'm prepared to do that too. We may not have the fourth vote here at this point. We're eagerly waiting Senator Starkovich to be here.
Find out where the votes are. We can
let's find out.
Well, all right.
I'll move House Bill 2900 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Otto moves House Bill 2900 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Howe?
No.
Jernstead?
No.
McCoy?
Aye.
Otto?
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Senator Starkovich, Senator Henderson?
I'm going to vote no. Answer notice reconsideration.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
We've got it taken care of. Go to 29.
As I understand this, I don't think it's going to be such a problem for the Bureau of Labor because they have to do this all the time, trying to figure out if jobs are substantially the same or if they're different. It's, as you were saying, under the Equal Pay Act and the State Equal Pay Act, you have to deal with these kinds of things all the time. And so I'm sure that if a job is substantially different, that you're going to take that into consideration in terms of what the tasks are that the person under 18 is doing as opposed to the person over 18. I have to say, when I get we have a little neighborhood carrier and he comes around talking about renewal of subscriptions. I've never seen him supervise. He just seems to come around and when he makes his route for the paper route, but maybe there are situations where there, or maybe he's supervised and I don't know it. I don't know. It doesn't appear to be.
Being an old newspaper person, I used to
we used to hire five or six boys there, seven or eight, and I would sit up in the house and in a little shack and drink coffee, and they would go out and do their duties, and if somebody missed something, then I would have to go out and take care of supervision. I would tell them when they came back to be sure and make their collections and all that sort of thing. But it was very little supervision.
Yeah, they
always. We wanted to work on their own,
yeah.
Show initiative.
Yeah. I was going to ask Mr. Bledin, I know in other businesses they offer adults trips and prizes as a, people are doing sales work as incentives. You don't think that's appropriate to offer adults as kind of incentives?
Madam Chair, for the most part, most of the newspapers in Oregon do not have adults doing this work. We, for example, our newspaper, we'll have, we offer all employees of our newspaper $3 a subscription to get started, just as an incentive for people that are working for us to do that. Now, we will discontinue that with this bill because we do not pay our carriers that, and we're not going to start, the employees of our newspaper are not going to start wanting prizes. The prizes are games, meetings, trips to Snow Bunny Lodge. They're youth activities. A lot of the prizes are group trips. A lot of the prizes are individual things. Carriers might come in and throw darts at balloons and win the prize that's behind that. There's all kinds of different programs that are put together. So for the most part, they're not things that are of interest to adults that may be in a boiler room operation at a large newspaper, or who may come in on a, for example, once a year basis. There are adults who travel around and go into newspapers and sell their services as a major promotion subscription solicitation effort.
Nice. Okay. Is there any further discussion on this bill? I think we will try to move it when Senator Starkovich comes, if he comes this morning.
Senator Hamby has returned.
I don't know where Senator Hamby stands on House Bill 2900.
2900.
We have just voted, and it failed. To me, this is very similar to the magazine issue with young people, but this is the...
I remember it, yes.
Yeah.
And have you added amendments?
No, amendments were presented. Apparently, they're not ready.
I'm supportive of the bill as it is.
As it is? Okay. Then I'm going to move reconsideration of the vote by which it was cast on House Bill 2900.
Madam Chair, may I say something before we vote? I kept fairly quiet, but I thought we should give Senator Houck a shot at coming up with the amendments, and it was my understanding that we would have those before we reconsider the bill. They're not here, which is unfortunate, and that's probably, and I thought at the time that was asking legislative counsel quite a bit to come between Friday morning and Monday morning to have those amendments ready. So I don't see any harm in putting this over for two more days till we can look at the amendments that we hoped would be here today and are not. But if you want to go ahead and throw it, why, I'll throw my no vote, and it'll probably pass. But I just don't think it's quite fair.
Well, I guess I can appreciate the need to want to have amendments. It appears, though, that we've got five of the committee members that are supporting the bill as it is. So,
Madam Chair, we're getting back. I get a little bit irritated when we start messing in an industry that we don't know much about, and we're going to upset something that's been going on for years because of... there has been an unfair situation or two around the state, but by and large, it's something that's been in place a long time. And I know, I have enough business sense to know that if we pass this bill, we're going to create a situation that, is a kid going to be 17 and a half years old, and he's going to be 18 and 5 days? It's going to create a different situation of employment altogether. Whether we want to do that or not, that's one thing we're going to do. Another thing is, what are we doing to the kids that are selling these things, and happily so? I know, for crying out loud, that I'm probably 3 or 4 years paid up on the Hood River News because I can't turn down some little kid that comes to the door about once a year. But that's all right. if some older person comes up and calls me on the phone, I can turn him down like a son of a gun. So that's neither here nor there. But we're getting in an area that I don't think we've thought much about, and I just think it's unfortunate that we're sticking our nose in it.
Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Otto.
Senator Jones.
Yes, Senator Otto. I died my lecture.
When you were not here, Larry Hill was not here. And someone from that end of the counter says, well, this is a good bill. Let's pass it out. We don't need testimony. And they were ready to pass it out. And then someone says, well, let's wait for Representative Hill. Now, that's the way the conversation went.
Madam
at that
floor.
Time. I still have the floor. That's the way the conversation went at that time. Jeb Bladeen brought in amendments, handwritten, just a copy. He wasn't prepared. Pardon me, Jeb, but you weren't. You brought in some hand-scribbled amendments. Oh, this is what we should be doing. And they weren't prepared, so obviously they weren't prepared to submit these amendments. I feel that, and I stated it before, that if we start messing with this bill and making exceptions and all these other things, we're creating an administrative nightmare to achieve the same results. Now, further comment to Senator Jernstead. He says that we should go ahead and not interfere into an area that we don't know anything about. We do it all the time.
I know it.
And you did it very recently by signing House Bill 3017 dealing with the electrical safety law, which you knew nothing about. I'm going to give you an opportunity
let's not get into it. Senator Jernstead, and then I'm going to ask Senator Hamby, but I really don't want to get into a side
I know. I want to tell you just what happened Friday, and it was possibly my fault, and it also adds to the confusion. I looked at this bill and was ready to pass it out, and in fact, I said, I'm ready to move this thing out, and my little mind wasn't working too good, and I saw it nothing but an agriculture bill, which the present law exists. I never stopped to think about its relationship to the newspaper industry. And I thought, well, boy, if my kid is 10 years old and picking loganberries like I used to do, he ought to get as much as a 19-year-old at the same box anyway. And so I thought, that's great. I thought it was strictly an agricultural bill, not knowing that that's all we have in the present law. So I was amiss. And man, I bit my tongue when I realized that, wait a minute, Jernstead, you jumped the gun. I usually don't do that, Madam Chairman, and I did, and I got myself in trouble.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have done it.
I guess we can do that in this process by getting overly enthusiastic. Senator Hamby.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess in with all respect to Senator Houck, when I came back into the hearing room and asked if amendments had been passed, and I was told no, I wrongly assume they were Senator Houck's amendments that had failed, and consequently I was ready to support the bill in its original form. And I guess in all respect to Senator Houck, I'd feel better waiting till Wednesday to look at the amendments and see if they pass or fail.
Senator Houck.
Houck's, forgive me.
Okay.
I'm not trying.
I would defer to.
All right. I guess I need to ask Senator Houck if he's going to have some amendments.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You got something down there.
Friday. You just couldn't get them cranked out. In fact, the ones that you have on the next bill just came in, and they were just three liners.
Okay. I think that we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2900 since we have a slight problem in having a few votes for it at this moment in time. And I'll just continue my reconsideration motion for Wednesday, I think. All right, we're going to have House Bill 2288. All right, now this, we have Mary Botkin is. Is she here? She'd asked to test.
She isn't here.
She was outside.
Because someone, Senator Houck, has amended. She wishes to testify in opposition.
All right. Well, let's get her in here. All right, now this bill was already heard. Senator Hawk has some proposed amendments, and this is the emergency telephone worker bill. All right, does Mary have a copy of the amendments?
Yes, I give Mary
okay.
a copy. Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Hawk, can you explain what your amendments do? I'm not familiar with this bill.
Thank you.
She begins her testimony and give you a little background on this. We heard the bill. One of the concerns I had that we were going to pick up quite a great number of people besides only emergency telephone workers. Right after the meeting, asked Mary and the fire chief?
He's 911.
He's not here. And the director of the emergency telephone and a agency, 911 agency, and the representative from cities and counties to come to my office and see just basically if we were opening up just a narrow scope or a very, very large scope. The representatives from ERB were also there. The representatives from ERB said, yes, that you are actually picking up the major group of people. Now, they have a ruling that basically says that if a small subclass of a general class is subject to mandatory arbitration, the whole class is. So basically, in sense, what it is it allows three or four or five telephone operators to kick the whole county into mandatory arbitration by their ruling. Now, what my amendments do, it allows 1 year for counties to pull these people out of the collective bargaining class. And that's basically the reason.
I just want to question a little further, Senator Hawk. When you said, you mean if these individuals happen to be in a bargaining unit, then that will make the whole bargaining unit subject to binding arbitration?
Right. That's what ERB has ruled. And I guess that's court, too. Do you want to come up and speak to that?
I'd like to see that ruling, too.
Well, they brought it with them.
You have a copy
in here? You can explain it a little bit better.
Is that in here?
Do we have copies of it or not?
No, it's a case hearing. They brought three of them.
Madam Chairman, for the record, my name is Kevin Lindgren. Senator Hawk, the question, and I wish I had brought the citation. It was a case that was, three or four years ago with the state penitentiary, where the ruling was, in essence, that if any members of a bargaining unit could not strike, that the entire unit could not strike, and the interest dispute was resolved through binding interest arbitration for all the people in that unit.
Chris, I wonder, the facts were a little different there. Was it most of the individuals guards and there were just a few clerks and that kind of thing?
Would it
be the
same
if you had a different fact situation where you just had a few number of emergency workers and a large number of non-effects?
Madam Chairman, the board goes at that in an interesting manner. There's the ability of the employer to petition for a redesignation of the unit, which would carve or could possibly carve those people out. For instance, if you had two or three people in a unit mm-hmm. that could not strike mm-hmm. and the vast majority could strike, the Employment Relations Board, my understanding is, would say, number one, that no one in the unit can strike because you have people in the unit that cannot strike. But the employer could, on a timely filed petition, petition the Employment Relations Board to carve those people out of the unit.
Mm-hmm.
So that what this bill would do in current form is that it would create, and I don't know how many units, we could not determine how many units, of where we would have perhaps a minority that could not strike and a minority that could not strike, a majority that could strike, and yet the entire unit could not strike then.
Well, I just wonder, though, for other purposes, if it's really going to be fair to put these few people in their own unit. I mean, for other kinds of issues that they have to deal with.
Madam
I'll have both of you, but...
Madam Chairman, Perhaps not. That would be a determination that the Employment Relations Board would make. I was given to understand in conversations that I had with them that they would probably, they're going to look at a community of interest as the determinative factor as to who's in and who's out of a unit, and that where there is a minority of those that can strike, they currently would segregate those employees.
Did we have anyone testify from the Employment Relations Board on Friday? Before the
committee? Wait, Madam Chair. They didn't testify. They were here, and then I drug them up to the office.
Well, I think it's something that should be before the committee.
That's great.
Mary, did you have a...
Well, I guess our concern is that the site that Kevin is using... for the record, I'm Mary Botkin from the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and we represent most of the 911 operators, which is what we're talking about here. The site that Kevin uses is the Oregon State Prison, and our case before ERB was based on the fact that during the 1972 prisons riot, that those people who were considered to be non-security, quote-unquote, employees, but were on the inside of the prison walls when the riot came down, were locked in, handed guns, and sent into cell blocks. And our concern is that, I mean, our concern then was that if they're going to be treated as a prison guard in an emergency situation or a correctional officer, as a security staff, whatever we want to refer to them as, then they're going to have the same benefits as a non-striking employee and will be classified as such. And they, and ERB ruled in our favor, and as many of you know, that was a landmark decision and was not an easy one for us to obtain, but we did. In a situation like this, maybe we're seeing boogeymen in the closets, but our experience has been that things are fair right now the way they are. When you determine that a group of employees does not have the right to strike, cities and counties have the right to go to ERB and request and petition for a unit clarification. At the point they petition for a unit clarification, we both have the right to go before ERB and make our case. ERB decides on the basis of that case that we present. They as cities and counties, or whoever, and we as the union that represents those people. It seems to us that this takes the balance out of that procedure.
All right, I'd like you to comment specifically on the amendments. What would the effect of those amendments be in your opinion?
Well, I think that when you change from duties include to the focal duties are, that it strengthens the position of the counties to split our units. And if that person who is not actually sitting at the telephone taking receiving calls is trained to do so and must do so in special emergency situations, and you've already split that person up because their focal duties are not, but they may be required at some point to do it, you follow what... Not being very articulate.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Is it your intention to pull the janitors in and, everyone else? Or I thought that we had specific, narrow definitions. Those people that are emergency telephone workers that receive information and pass information on. That was your testimony.
I agree, and I think that the duties include, I think that does that, Senator. I think that focal duties are, changes it just enough that, in my experience with cities and counties, they get pretty sloppy about who they're using to do what. And at some point, we have to have some ability to go back and say, no, if you're going to use these people here, even just once in a while, then
well,
they're part of
the... Let me ask Senator Howe a question, because I've never heard the term focal duties. What does that mean?
Focal duties means primary, and it came from the herb representative saying primarily that was a common language used in their ruins to designate a very small group of people. is where the one of my concerns is the one that Mary basically states in reverse, that when you say emergency telephone worker means a person whose official duties include receiving it. It doesn't say it's their primary duty. You know, that could be someone in very early training, the 911 that's a janitor who's going to work himself up. What we're doing here is to make sure that we have emergency service people manning emergency service during a strike, and for that we're going to allow binding arbitration. So there's a continuation of it, the same philosophy with fire and police.
Well, I was just going to ask a question because I'm not familiar enough about how this would work in smaller areas. I assume in the large metropolitan areas there's probably a person that does this full time, but in the smaller areas, how do I would assume?
Man, 24 hours a day.
Well,
in a smaller area.